Welcome to the Athenaeum Review podcast. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Shandong Ji, project leader for the Panda X collaboration Searching for Dark Matter, and distinguished university professor of physics at the University of Maryland. He has many honors and awards, including the Humboldt Research Award, the Distinguished Nuclear Physicist Award, and the Hermann Feshbach Prize in Theoretical Nuclear Physics. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
I wanted to ask you about the dark matter research, and I understand that the search for dark matter has been going on for some years now, and I wondered if you could describe the kind of current state of research and how it has developed since it first started. I know it's a big question, but just what people are looking for today as opposed to 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I think there are huge amount of evidence to show that dark matter actually exists.
Yeah.
And but almost all of these evidences are related to what we call the gravity.
Yeah.
We see dark matter through gravity.
Yeah.
However, that this is not enough. And for us, we need to understand what the dark matter particles are.
Right.
They're not ordinary atoms like we're made of, or the sun is made of, or stars made of. They're a totally different kind of stuff that we don't know even what it is. And it actually has been 30 years.
Yeah.
The research in this field has been over 30 years already.
And you, how long have you been working on this search?
For 10 years.
For 10 years.
Right.
And I noticed that you also have theoretical research in the area of quantum chromodynamics.
Correct.
And I wondered how you moved or how you combined both that research and this dark matter search. Are they closely related to?
In a way, it is. My research in what's called a quantum chromodynamics is to understand the structure of protons and neutrons, which exists in the center of every atom.
Yeah.
And this is what we call the ordinary matter.
Right.
And so we need to understand how the ordinary matter behaves and where they come from.
Yeah.
And so this part of research is about these questions. The dark matter is an entirely different beast. And in fact, as I said, we are convinced that they do exist, but yet that we need to find it out.
Yeah.
What are they? And right now that we're focusing on to detect them through laboratory equipments.
Yeah.
And so we're building equipments and try to see this. And as I said, we've been doing this for this field. I've been doing this for 30 years.
Okay.
And we have not found dark matter yet. But I think that one day we will. That's the conviction.
Is it correct that that certain detectors, certain dark matter detectors, would be looking for matter of a certain mass that you would be expecting the particles to be a certain size, and so if you find them, you would know it's that size. But if you don't find them, the particles would be larger or smaller. Is that how it works?
Well, before we design experiment to search and detect them.
Yeah.
We have some good guesses.
Right.
And we have learned a lot in the last century about the physics world.
Yeah.
We came up with a lot of empirical rules.
Yeah.
And observations. So what we do is we guide by our past experience. Of course, you know, new discoveries sometimes is unexpected and sometimes is beyond our imagination.
Yeah.
But as a scientist, you do best you can, and through the previous experience, we have certain idea what the documentary should be look like. And so therefore, we spend a lot of time to looking in the region we believe they belong. And so that's what we, that has been our guidance for the past research. And of course that we still have not found them, but on the other hand, we have not exhausted the possibilities that it could exist. And so therefore we are continuing searching in what we believe in the right place.
I was reading one article that described, so the your project, the Panda Project, which is in China, and then I understand there are other projects, in one in Italy, one in South Dakota.
Correct.
And are these, do they all use a sort of similar approaches to look, or are there different kind of ideas that are driving the different?
Yes, those experiments are pretty much in the same ballpark.
Right.
Okay, they're looking for a class of particle, what we call the WIMPs.
Right.
And the technology also are quite similar. The reason that they're similar because we have discovered about 10 years ago that this particular method of search is extremely powerful. And as usual, when you find a powerful tool, then you try to use that and to get the best out of this powerful tool. And that method is called the liquid xenon detection technology. And so the experiment in Italy is using this, and the experiment in the US, South Dakota, is also using this. And we're doing this also in China, and with the same kind of technology, but they're not exactly the same. And people have different emphasis when in different setups.
Right.
You know, in terms, for example, those laboratory, they have different characters, and also that how do you make the actual experiment are a bit different.
Yeah.
And the important thing is that if you one of the experiment found something, and the other experiment had to confirm it.
Right.
Because it's not that we want to make sure it's not an artifact of a particular setup.
Right.
And so scientific work has to be confirmed and reconfirmed.
Right.
And so therefore having similar experiments but different setups are very, very useful.
I saw that supposedly there was one experiment in Italy that claimed to have discovered dark matter but could not get it. It was not confirmed.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. There is a crystal experiment using crystals. Italy, they have purportedly discover something resemble a dark matter particle. But however, I think many, many other experiments in the world have not confirmed this discovery. And so therefore, many people think it's a peculiar feature of that experiment and some kind of noise I think most people don't take it very seriously at present time.
Right. I wondered if you could you possibly explain a little bit about why the liquid xenon method is more successful or a valuable approach? Why all these different projects are all using the liquid xenon?
Okay. That's a very good question, by the way, because many people actually don't know what are the parameters or what are the conditions to do the best search. One of the most important issue with dark matter search is fighting with noise.
Right.
And so a lot of other detection technologies, they have so-called radioactivities, which will resemble dark matter events. And so therefore you wanted to have as low radioactivity as possible.
Yeah.
And xenon is an inert chemical element and can be easily processed, so therefore it is extremely clean.
Yeah.
And so very, very clean material is a very, very important start point.
Yeah.
And once you have a clean material, you wanted to make sure it can be made a big detector.
Yeah.
So, and then bigger detector have better sensitivity. And so that's also true with the liquid xenon. And right now, I think some of the biggest detector in preparation is about 10 tons of liquid xenon.
Wow.
And this, by the way, the world production of xenon per year is about 50 tons.
Okay.
So this is 1/5 of the world supply.
Wow.
per year.
Yeah.
And so you can make a big detector and then clean. And then the third point is that why this detecting technology is powerful is that you can both see what's called light and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the dark matter collision happens, it will produce light signal, electric signal, and many detectors cannot do both. So this detector, you know, liquid xenon cooled to under below 100 degree of Celsius, it become a liquid, which is very similar to water.
Yeah.
So light can propagate inside, it's completely transparent.
Yeah.
And so we can see the light and we can also see the charges or electrons. And so these two characters are very, very important for analyzing the information.
Do you, I wanted to ask, especially for those of us who have not studied physics, if there's a source that you recommend if someone wants to learn more about this search, but can't, you know, read the physics journals, is there something that you recommend for people to learn more about this?
Sure. I think there are occasional articles in Scientific American.
Yeah.
And also there are news articles, which usually are not very systematic, and however, it does tell you what are the incremental progresses are.
Yeah.
There are also popular science articles that people write, and I also recommend the websites of people based on. And then, you know, what are the results are. In fact, you know, we got some of the world best results in the last few years. And then I speculated what would be in the future, this field is going to be, and what we're going to do.
Finally, I also wanted to ask about your own, in your own research, how did you become interested in physics and decide to become a physicist in your academic career?
That's an easy question.
Okay.
I think, you know, I had a great interest in physics as a high school student and also an undergraduate student. And I felt that this is the most interesting thing to work on as a human being. And physics certainly had extremely illustrious history.
Yeah.
And in fact, brought us all the science and technologies and what we enjoy today. But I think to understand how the world works is really extremely fascinating.
Yeah.
So it basically hooked me on for many decades.
Yeah.
And so,
were there certain physicists that you learned about historically as an undergraduate that were inspiring to you in terms of their discoveries, in particular?
Yeah, I think that you know, what strikes me is the beauty and simplicity
of the
fundamental things.
Yeah.
Behind all the phenomena that
yeah.
we see every day.
Yeah.
And we basically knows everything.
Yeah.
In physics, that why things happen, how it happens.
Yeah.
And those fundamental rules are very simple. And
yeah.
so it makes you feel extremely satisfied that the world is understandable.
It sounds, sometimes when I've heard other scientists say something like that, and it reminds me, it seems you could say that maybe there's some similarity between this satisfaction in understanding nature and also in appreciating a work of art, that
mm-hmm.
there's this kind of aesthetic
yes.
value. Yeah.
There is, in fact, there is a considerable parallel
yeah.
Between the beauty of physics and beauty of art.
Yeah.
And in fact, as I said, that I am also a theoretical physicist.
Yeah.
And as a theoretical physicist, we try to discover the rules, how the world works. And a lot of times we base on simplicity and beauty.
Yeah.
That was our guidance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes we reject a theory and just think it's too ugly.
Yeah.
It shouldn't work that way. That God should have a taste.
yeah, yeah. I wonder if perhaps if you're teaching or lecturing art, are there examples of arts or artists or maybe philosophers who express this kind of perspective that you use to kind of communicate that sense of beauty and so forth? Or is it more strictly in the science?
You know, it's very often we have a theme in our theoretic physics.
Yeah.
You know, we look at this world, it's very much like an impressionistic painting.
Yeah.
And if you look at the far away and you see things which are beautiful, simple, and you look at close, you see a different things.
Yeah.
And something simple and beautiful.
Yeah.
And when you up very, very close, again, you see something different.
Yeah.
I think that is very much like what the world is.
Yeah.
And it has different layers, and each layer has its beauty. And so I think that you can enjoy the same thing with at a different distance.
It's hard when talking about the distances involved in physics or astrophysics. It's so difficult to kind of imagine or to understand how
mm-hmm.
those great, very great or very small sizes truly are. But it seems like this sense of simplicity and beauty maybe helps help it make sense in a way. That's
right.
Well, our guest today is Xiangdong Ji, the project leader for the PandaX collaboration Searching for Dark Matter. And he's here at UT Dallas to give the lecture entitled Searching for Dark Matter, the Key Player of Modern Cosmology. Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
It's a pleasure.
This is the Athenaeum Review podcast, and you can find out more at athenaeumreview.org.